bridges and connections. But if they're not going the same direction you're going in, they're only going against you. And you have to wait until they pass so you can try to go down there. And then someone else comes down to get, oh, I got to move again. Fuck that. Go with the people that are going your direction and get out of the main interstate highway. Like, listen, the highway might be the fastest way, but going the back row where everyone's going the same route is the best way. Because it might take a little longer that way, but at least there's no one stopping you.
What's up, everyone? Nate Sorrentino here, back with another episode of the Freethinkers Emergence Podcast. And today, I have two of my homies with me, Kyle and Knox. Yes, sir. So, Knox is an incredible producer. Kyle is an incredible person. There's a lot to say about both of you guys, but...
Get the mic up here, dude.
Yeah. You can take the bass off, or you can just take the mic off the stand, so you can just hold it. Whatever just works do fucking best.
Sets with it, dude.
Cool.
Fucking
dude.
Actually, sets. I might even be able to just right here.
You can hear yourself more.
I'm pretty close up to mine.
There we go. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So, dude, this is awesome. Thank you guys for coming
on. Absolutely, man.
First things first. Let's talk about the creativity in being a producer, and then for me, for like podcasting, and then whatever it goes from there. But I know you're really into loud and being out of the box. Like, forget the box exists, and now figure out what is space.
Of course, yeah, I like that. What is space? It's all about like, over the years, about like finding out the negative space, because when you start producing, you inherently just want to stack fucking sounds all the time. Like just layering. How many things can I throw in a beat? How expansive can I get? How maximalist can I get? And then over time, it's about just reduction. And I learned from the principles of like people like Rick Rubin, who he would say back in the day with records like LL Cool J and stuff like that, it would say on the actual, I don't know if you knew this, on the actual disc, it would say reduced by Rick Rubin, which means he reduced it down to what it should be. He did the same thing on Yeezus too. I wasn't sure. Do you ever listen to Kanye's Yeezus demos?
No.
Dude, fucking insane. It's like the most avant-garde experimental versions of the records, like very dissonant. Musically, it didn't even make sense a lot of the time, but that's like what it should be. It should be this raw state that's kind of ugly, and it's like, ooh, there's a lot here, and you just mold it back into like a clay sculpture. Wow. Rick Rubin came in and just molded it all down into what you hear today as Yeezus. One of the, in my opinion, one of the greatest Kanye albums of all time. But yeah, that's pretty much my principle and my philosophy on music production at this point in time at the age of 36, which is actually ironically the same age Kanye was when he did Yeezus. So yeah, that's kind of where my mindset's been at as of late. But yeah, I love layering sounds. I love like pushing sounds as much as I can. I think a lot of people think AI is the end-all be-all of sound design, and it's totally not. It's just fundamentally following what we've already made up until this point. And I do think there's going to be neural networks, especially, I don't know if you've heard about it, like AIs communicating with each other to create new textures and new things, which I think is cool. But I think the human guidance inherently in the way we can kind of create everything from this organic state, I think is really going to guide things in the core foundational values of where we're going with technology implementation in the future with music.
I agree with that. And I believe that humans are the root of AI, where AI would have no intelligence if it wasn't for humans programming it. Right. So everything basically comes from us. Now they can have their own aspect of creativity, but I don't know how sentient they'll actually be. Right now, they're not really like conscious enough to create.
It's really interesting because they say like it's going to be, they're going to become sentient and all that stuff. And then some scientists are like, yeah, like that's never really going to happen the way that we think it's going to happen. You know, they don't have the compute power to even really do it. I think there's a lot of like, you know, a lot of hype around it becoming sentient that gets investors involved in big, you know, big money coming in. So like, oh, it could be sentient, but it's really not. I mean, even like some of the stuff that Elon Musk presents, you see it with him in all respect to Musk, man. I mean, the guy's a genius, obviously, but a lot of the demos he comes up with, even the Cybertruck, he had to go through so many iterations to even get it to what you see driving on the road today. But he started previewing it like years ago, and he brought brought it out, and it was like, yeah, it's a working model. And he even said this. I don't know if you've seen the interview with Elon Musk where he talks about it, where it's like, you know, stop, don't talk about what you're doing. Present a working model of it to some degree, and then that will take to market way better than just talking about the idea and the philosophy of it. And that's why every single time, like, he just previewed the robots. He had a conference where he brought the humanoid robots out. Dude, they were getting voiced by real humans on the intercom on the robots. That wasn't the real AI technology in them, you know? And it's funny. I noticed that even with the first iPhone they brought out, that was like a beta version of the OS, iOS. It wasn't even a working model. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, I don't know if you've ever seen that, like, Steve Jobs was really, like, trying to really juggle through the, you know, how to do the presentation correctly, because if one wrong click, one wrong thing, it could have threw off the whole entire Apple conference. So it's like, it's...
Wow.
That's one of the things about AI and you know, even with music, man, it really comes back to even any form, man. It's like, you want to create a working model that's like, okay, here's what we got going on here. You know what I mean?
100%.
Yeah.
People like to see things, not hear things. They like to touch things and feel things more than just see them. Yes. It's like everything, the closer you can get to like physical, three-dimensional, something you can actually mess around with and with your hands, the better it's going to be.
Absolutely. Because that's all we know as human beings. It's like the interaction, you know?
Exactly.
Any idea can be thought of.
Yeah.
You think of the craziest idea. I mean, even like clips, you know, you're like, that's still something that can happen. It's going to take a long time for it to manifest. Like, you have that exciting moment where it's like, yeah, we can make this happen, but it's like, how fast can we make it happen?
Yeah.
And you know, that's the tricky part, is like, you really got to kind of like shoot for the moon, and you're probably going to hit a hill somewhere. You know what I mean?
100%. And once in a while you make it out and that's it. Like,
right.
I really do live by the, you just put 100% into everything that you do, and all it takes is one time for it to go right. And this is like, I mean, you've worked with a couple of major artists at this point in your life. Was that aspect of going 100% into everything you do and then hitting it really good with a couple artists applied to that same rule?
Oh, of course, man. I mean, like, there was it was a photo I put up years ago when I was homeless and I was working off my laptop on a park bench in the rain. And I had a microphone, like, underneath the coat. Like, I had my coat over my head on the laptop, and I was making beats. So, you know, I went through the years of just throwing things down. And I'm at the age now where I'm very selective with my time. I don't want to just create a billion things, because I've already done that. I've already went through the data set of, like, knowing that I can do all that. Now it's about knowing, okay, when I do something, I'm going to probably commit to this. I know what I want, and I know how to get it and when to get it. It's all inspiration. Like, we just cooked an idea right before we came here. Sorry for being late, by the way.
Don't even stress it.
I know we're here for five, and then, like, actually, it's funny because my session later canceled anyway, so I could have done five, but it worked out. But anyways, going back around, it's like, you know, it's a thing where it's like, I can create a billion ideas, but, like, you know, I've already gone through that. I've already done my 10,000 hours, and all it is intrinsically as a producer going to this down at this point is that me being 36, I feel like some younger kids I will work with, they'll almost look at me like I'm a fossil or something like that. Like, when I used to be like 18, I used to look at a 36-year-old like, yeah, they're washed up. Like, I used to look at them like that. And now at my age now, I'm like, dude, as long as the mind is fresh and I know what's going, that person know what's going on and they're very hip to what's going on, they're kind of more of a threat, because it's like, you know, I have the experience and I have the newfound
ingenuity.
Knowledge.
Yeah, ingenuity. Bro, real shit.
And that's what it is. Like, when I was 18, 20 years old, like yourself, you know, I 20, right? Or 21.
22.
22? Oh, I thought you were 20. Oh, wow. Okay. Take that. Yeah. It's still the same thing pretty much.
No, dude, I don't take it in any bad way at all.
You get the baby face, so roll with it.
Yeah, bro. I will.
But, man, it's like, you know, when it comes back to it, it's like when I was 20 or 22 or whatever, I would always try to be on the cusp, have the ingenuity, always be creating, like, kind of like off the cuff, just try to fit in, right? And I think once I started fitting in and started actually getting a foot in a ground in, now I just know the machine works. Now that I know the machine works, all that guesswork kind of goes out, right?
Yeah.
So say we develop an idea, you know, whatever, whether it's clips or whatever the fuck it is. It's like we go through the process of developing the idea, and then once the concentric circles kind of bind together and you create the real element that works and you know it works, and then it's like, the machine's smooth, baby. And all you got to do is just make sure you grease the wheel, grease the wheel. So by what I mean by grease the wheel is that you can turn the wheel, turn the wheel, turn the wheel, and eventually you're going to hit a snag. And it's about, okay, what is snagging at? Is it a branch, some leaves? Is it the terrain that you're in? Maybe you got to switch the terrain. Take that wheel somewhere else, right? For instance, like my wheel has been turning out here for so long that I feel like intrinsically I've been just like on the peak of the mountain out here as far as like the hottest artist doing billions of streams total in my work. There's no one out here doing that in New England. That stays in New England.
Yep.
A lot of people go to L.A. They get, you know, commissioned in L.A., Atlanta. And they'll do even bigger numbers out there. But out here in New England, I've just been at that mountain point. The wheel's been going against a rock at the top of a mountain. And I can't go any fucking higher.
Yeah.
So what do I got to do? I can try to get over that little rock, but it's like I end up falling back down, or I go back down the mountain from here. But what I want to do is just get a helicopter and fly over to LA. And where I am on the mountain over here, over in LA, is probably like, I don't know, quarter way up the fucking mountain out there. So yeah. it's like, you know, I'm flying with the eagles out here, and I go out there, I'm flying with the fucking pigeons still, you know? And it's not that I don't have any accomplishments, but out there, it's like, it's a humbling lesson where it's like, you have people out there that just make hits every week, you know? And I want to be there. I know I'm going to be there. It's just a matter of relocating myself there. And like we talked about earlier, we could talk about the ideas, we could talk about the concepts, but until the action is taken and the working model is demonstrated, aka you going to LA, aka me going to LA, aka him going to LA, or whoever to LA, or wherever that your market deems the best thing. Because if you were in medicine or education, it would be go to Boston.
Yeah,
right. Like shit. it's like the opposite. Say you're in LA, oh, I want to be in you know, the best college or the best, you know, medical field. You're going to Boston.
Yeah, without a doubt.
You know, so it's like with our fields and creative, and it's about going to LA for sure.
Yeah, I really do agree with you, and oh, dude, that's what it has to be when you're working with anyone. You start building stuff, you communicate, you kind of, Tony Robbins once said it this way, you create a reality bridge between each other's imagination, because everyone's living in their own version of the universe, and then somewhere in between your version and my version is the world that we are living in right now, with all these things in front of us, with this podcast going on, everything. So sometimes your reality bridge can only be manifested so much because you have other people's bridges who are coming into your reality that are keeping your bridge from pushing harder.
Right.
Sometimes you need the right other people around you in order to even make your own stuff come to life. Like, you have what it takes. You're this suppressed by the ones around you.
Well, it's a thing. Yeah, exactly. And what it is like, I love the bridge metaphor, because it's like, you can invite all these other bridges and connections, but if they're not going the same direction you're going in, they're only going against you, and you have to wait until they pass so you can try to go down there, and then someone else comes down to get, oh, I got to move again. Fuck that. Go with the people that are going your direction and get out of the main interstate highway. Like, listen, the highway might be the fastest way, but going the back row where everyone's going the same route is the best way. Because it might take a little longer that way, but at least there's no one stopping you.
Yeah.
There's no one holding ideas back.
Yeah, you know? 100%. What you just said, like, I felt like I was trying to take the highway here in New England for what I'm doing, whether that be originally diving into psychedelics, going to UVM, studying neuroscience, wanting to go into psychedelic chemistry, basically. Right. And then eventually I only was able to go for one semester, dropped out, was like, how can I help people now with the knowledge I have?
Right.
Targeting consciousness, mindfulness, stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Now create 3M's coaching. Now I've been making this course for a while. I have to re-record the middle section because I accidentally deleted it. The first and third section or units are recorded. It's like 28 lessons in total. It'll probably take someone about 3 months, 6 months.
I'm going to do like an ebook.
I've started writing a book, but the course is videos and then a workbook that goes along with all the videos.
Gotcha.
So
that's cool, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, how does, coming back to your thing, like you're juggling a lot. you know? And it's like one of those things that like you're doing so many things, and say you do this podcast and all of a sudden your mental health thing or one of these other things just goes through the fucking roof tomorrow. Like all of a sudden you just get a million orders and things just go out of control. It's like, whoa. It's like, that's, then you just kind of found the thing that like really works the most.
Yeah.
And most got to ask yourself, like, if that thing took off tomorrow and you had millions of dollars coming in from it, would you want to stick with that forever? Or would it be something that you want to delegate to someone else to keep making the millions and then just keep doing other stuff?
I would probably delegate it. I already know what my like true thing is, and that's like psilocybin-based therapy. Like, I'm really good at communicating and getting people to express how they feel so they don't have to carry that dark energy around.
You two got to connect on that in this.
Yeah,
this
we
is
like,
that's where Kyle jumps in, man.
Yeah, 100%.
You should talk, man. You know, you're all, let's go, man, you know. I'm fucking spewing over here.
Yeah, I'm yapping. Dude, the psychedelic therapies, going to UVM, hoping I could make connections in Burlington where, I mean, there's some people who are into psychedelics there, but it's not as much as I thought I was gonna see. A lot of cluelessness in college, especially at big university like UVM. I'd talk to people and the majority of them had no clue what they wanted to do, and I was like, what are you doing here? Like, who's paying for this for you? Like, I can't even afford to go to college, and I know exactly what I want to do and how to do it. And you're out here wasting your money and your time where you could be just studying stuff for free on the internet. Be like, oh, this is what I think is cool, and then go somewhere. That's how I figured out I like psychedelics, by watching YouTube videos. It's like, simple as that.
Some people just don't, especially at the age of college age, they don't grasp life in a sense of urgency. They kind of just riding along. They're probably still living with their parents. They think everything's just kind of taken care of for them. And I understand that because I was the same way. When I went to college, I was living with my dad and my grandpa. And, you know, I just kind of thought like, hey, man, I'm never going to have to worry about anything. And then come to find out, we had to get the fuck out of there. About a year later, my grandfather passed away. So we had to sell the house. He had debts because my mom ended up selling a bunch of his shit and got a bunch of credit cards in his name. My mom committed credit fraud on my grandfather, but by the tune of like $150,000 and put him into a hole. We didn't even know about this, really. We just kind of were, like, living with him. And she was actually homeless. We had to kick her out. My sister got power of attorney. My mom, I used to hang out with her. You know, God rest her soul. She's passed away in 2013. But, you know, she was the party animal with us. Like, I had all my friends over the house all the time. And we used to take, you know, ecstasy together, smoke weed. Like my mom literally, like, enabled that. She didn't care. Like, she used to go buy bottles for us. We used to get, like, fucking gallons of liquor. We used to just have, like, bitches over the crib. Just make music. We made a ton of music together. And we had a rap group called Disciples of Ill. And yeah, so like I just was kind of riding life.
I like that name.
it was sick. When you're 16, Disciples of Ill is such a fucking gangster name, especially when it's like 2005 and like, you know, gangster rap's big. But anyways, moving forward, it's like a lot of people in the college age, they just kind of are riding life. And I didn't really realize or appreciate things until I had to get out and I actually had to start paying my own rent and really have to manage that. And then I also, when I lost my mother, because even when I was paying rent, I could still go to my mom's. There was still a backup plan. It's like, as long as you have a backup plan, you're comfortable in a sense. I think it's all about making yourself uncomfortable so you can have growth. It's like going to the gym. It's like, you know, you go till failure. You know, because if you're just doing a set of 12 with low weight, it's like, dude, you're going to get nothing out of that besides like going to failure with that low weight, at least, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's about that's really a thing of life, is you have to go until failure. You have to go until something breaks. And I think a lot of these college kids, they just kind of ratting it up. But once they lose a parent, once they lose their footing, they'll realize it. And they'll realize whether they fucked up or not, and they can correct it or not, or they can fucking stay in a shelter and be homeless for the rest of their life, you know? But one thing about you have a really good mind and a really good mindset in workability, where you want this, you know, that hunger. That's something you are kind of born with, to be honest with you. Because even when I kind of had it, man, and I, you know, I was comfortable and I was living with my parents, I still wanted it. Mm-hmm. I still wanted to make music. Like, I literally, I sat with my dad. I got FL Studio in 2001. And I remember I played the demo songs that came with FL Studio. And Deadmau5 had, like, a demo on there at the time. And I played it. I'm like, how the fuck did he do this? I don't know how he made this beat. But, like, in the beats I was making, they were cool. But nothing like that. And I'm like, I told my dad, I'm like, someday, I'm going to make you proud with this. And this is when I was 13. And this is 2001. So, like,
wow.
I'm sure you did the same thing with your parents, man. You're like, listen, I'm going to do this. And, you know, and I think LA is just another step for you. And, you know, yeah. It's awesome, man.
Yeah, dude, I'm really fortunate. I mean, I paid rent over the summer, and I lived in this house with my sister and her boyfriend all summer. My parents were at their house at the Cape. So I've had a very fortunate, like, growing up. And I've always just been so hungry for more, and I've always had access to the easy route. But I know nothing good comes from taking the easy route. I've always challenged myself. I need challenge. When I'm not challenged, I basically just do nothing and smoke weed and chill. Because, like, everything's super easy. Like, you guess you're like, all right, well, if 1 equals A and B equals 2 and then C is the combination, I got 3. And that's just how I see life. I can just break everything down into each individual variable. And I'm like, all right, so if this, and this happen, combine all those things. And then I predict the future. And now I just keep going down every timeline to everything. And I'm like, all right. And I think a big part of this that gave me that ability, it was through reflection with using psychedelics, specifically with psilocybin. I think it's the ultimate reflection tool, where when you're using it, you can look at whatever situation you want to look at, and everything that went right, and more specifically went wrong, is super clear.
Right.
You just have a complete view of every situation. And now you don't need to really struggle to figure out, oh, what could I have done better? It's just, oh, this is what I messed up. All right, now what's next?
Of course.
It's like, don't spend too much time reflecting, but also do the reflecting immediately after. And that's how you get really good at getting better.
Of course.
Because the faster you can get better, that's where you actually start growing exponentially and no longer this in like a linear function. Well, everyone, it's like the first 100,000 is the hardest to make. And once you get out of that first 100,000, you make it to that million mark. Now you're starting to make a good amount. But making it from the million to the billion, or even to 100 million, that's another big ass plateau.
That was Kevin from Shark Tank. You seen that? Like, he talked about in that context.
Really?
Like, the 100,000, the million. He talks about, like, you know, he's like, I never won that Billy. Yeah, man. And, you know, and then you get to that, the top of that, you have like 100 billion. You're like, I just want to be happy. And because, like, at the end of the day, money's great and money, you know, and it, but like, here's the thing, it's like, with good money comes good ideas usually.
Yeah.
You know? You have to execute that, right? Because you can have, because a lot of people that just inherit money too, like there's people out there that just get a windfall of money.
Yeah.
And they'll end up spilling it all and fucking dumping it all into nothing and just not doing anything with it because they don't have any good ideas. Like me, I'll spend $8,000 on a synthesizer. And some people are like, why the fuck would you buy that? Like, you don't need to do that. You can just go on the computer. I'm like, no, because I'm going to make some really good shit with this. And I know this is going to create more product. This is going to make a product that not some kid can just get on a laptop and do. Because believe it or not, hardware synths, I don't care what producers want to say, they sound way better than software. I can literally tell when someone's using software nowadays, even as this guy.
Yeah, no, it's the difference is night and day. It really is. Because I'm so VST oriented. So to compare the two is just, it's night and day. It's crazy.
Yep. I believe it.
You get like the whole dynamic range. And the thing that Knox has told me over the years is like with VST, it's like
VST is the virtual.
Sine waves are, you're getting a pure sine wave from analog synthesis.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, it's mad cool how much you guys know about the, like, when you start diving into it.
Oh, yeah.
I just think I love meeting people who know a lot about the thing they care about, and it takes a bit to gain that. Like, we talked about the 10,000 hours earlier, and I put in a lot of time into studying how the brain and how consciousness work. That's what I spend my time doing. So when I observe other people, I can immediately figure out, okay, this is why they do what they do. This is why they think how they think.
Right.
And once you figure out how they use your mind, you basically just become invincible because you're unstoppable, you're undeniable. You just have all these mindsets that allow you to flourish, whether it's not being fearful of anything or being limitless. Like, all these little things, and you add them all together, eventually you just become like, what? What even is this? This is like, this doesn't seem possible.
It's funny because it was like, it's one of those things that, like, on a podcast, you want to, like, just have the factual name of it, and maybe Kyle knows what I'm talking about, but there was a study done in, like, the late 70s, early 80s. I forget exactly when. It was around that period of time. It's actually, unclassified at this point, piece of documentation from, I believe, the CIA.
You're talking about the Gateway Method?
The Gateway, I believe, yeah. You pretty much have it. The Gateway Method, I believe. But you can probably look up Gateway, CIA, mm-hmm. late 70s, early 80s, something like that, and it will pop up. And what it, do you know about this at all?
I know a lot of CIA experiments, bro, so.
Okay. I feel like you do. So, like, so what it was is, like, you can basically tune your mind to go to the circadian, like, your rhythm of the heart,
mm-hmm.
and there's a way you can actually, like, channel in. I'm saying, I'm paraphrasing this terribly, but if you look it up, you know what I'm saying? And he actually did an experiment that you can have enough power to be able to, like, control the world. It's like a crazy, again, I'm paraphrasing this extremely so, because I haven't read about this in a while.
Yep.
And that information got kind of rusty in my mind, but it's there. Go look it up. I think it's the Gateway Process. Gateway Process.
Yeah.
If you look it up, it's insane. It's like it'll blow your fucking mind. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, but I will one day.
Yeah, I would literally look it up today. It's one of the most insane things I've ever. It's like one of those things that, like, is so fucking insane that you kind of just forget about it. Cause, like, it's
almost like
nowadays everyone's like, you know, how many times, like, every other week you hear about an alien being discovered now? Like, you see a mothership or some shit like that. No one gives a fuck. No one even cares. Like, don't you think that's fucking crazy? Like, we went for so long, like, people freaking out about a UFO in the sky. Oh my God. And as soon as it's actually revealed that there's, like, clusters of, like, supposed alien colonies, and it's showing, like, they're literally coming out in the news. The mainstream media now mm-hmm. is coming out showing these structures and showing these things. Everyone's just kind of, like, blind eye. It's like, what if they came out about Bigfoot today and said, oh, yeah, we found him? I feel like no one's going to give a fuck.
Yo, for real.
It's crazy. Like, us as human beings, we like when there's mystery. You know, as soon as something's figured, it's like some wicked bad bitch, and you just want to fuck her wicked bad. And as soon as you fuck her, you're like, okay, cool, I fucked her. Like,
yeah, literally, you know, bro.
Like, you know,
dude, it's, you said it so well.
It's that's what it is. It's well, like that's a very layman's way to put it, but that's really what it is.
Yeah, the art of being mysterious is very, very seductive, and it is attractive for that matter. And everything, not just people. So whether it's an idea, like, people want to know about Bohemian Grove. Have you heard of that?
Of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, it's very mysterious. Like, what are they doing out in the woods? Oh my gosh. Like, are they sacrificing people? Like, what? And so there's all these people who are, like, diving down the rabbit holes online. Some people even venture out there and, like, secretly videotape stuff.
You see that guy on YouTube that put up, like, he went out there on a canoe with a fucking frying pan as a paddle board? And he fucking, like,
he was, like, one of the first ones to do it, too.
That's wild. No, I haven't.
He put up multiple videos, and then he actually got some, like, DMCA takedowns, I believe, on some of the content. He went there. He was right outside the outskirts, and he went there also when there was no one there. So he went there, like, when it was shut down, and, like, the lack of security was insane. Like, it was just, like, he was just roaming around the fucking camp. No one even saying anything to this guy. It's like, you'd figure there's a couple trail cams up there. Like, it right? just seemed like, I got to be honest with you, it seemed a little fishy. Like, I feel like sometimes, like, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm right, but I know I'm right in some instances that controlled opposition is a very, very real thing. Where it's like,
I agree with that.
You know, like maybe they have this guy be the guy that's trying to break into Bohemian Grove. So the people that actually want to break into Bohemian Grove,
they don't do it now. They don't do it because someone did it.
Yeah, someone did it. And I think that's a very real thing. The fact this guy can walk around and there's not one trail cam in a place that has some of the richest people on earth blows my fucking mind. But yet there's a guy in Vermont recently that had a trail cam that caught some Taliban-looking motherfuckers coming over the border in his backyard.
Bruh.
A little weird, right? A little strange.
Dude, that sounds so crazy. Wow.
Yeah, no, it's very real. And it just, you have to ask those questions, like, why is that the case, you know?
I know, it did seem a little easy. Like, he didn't... very little struggle. I mean, the fucking canoe in the frying pan was, like, the most struggle, but, like...
Yeah, now talking about it, it's almost like they did a Mad Lib with the story plot. It's like, all right, well, he's gonna use a insert this in there,
frying pan.
Like, it's like, and it creates like a sense of like we're talking about the frying pan, and like you haven't even seen this guy yet, but now it's like the frying pan guy versus like use a, if everything's just straight and arrow, it's boring. No one wants to remember that.
The like shock people, value too.
The shock value mixed with like random shit. It's like it's got to be a mixture of both. It can't be too chaotic. It's going to have like one or two elements. That is way out of line, but then it's saying the same story that you want to be entertained by, though.
100%. That is such a great point. I try to do that with like my life for real.
Yeah.
Like I like the consistency principle because it allows people to look at you as sane. For a long time, I'd change my beliefs so often because I kept learning so fast that I was like expanding so rapidly. Like I'd be like, one day I'd believe in full like Christianity, next day I'm like, oh, I think Buddhism might be the way now, and then all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, what if I combine all these religions into one, and then I just like use a little piece from everything and just make my own religion.
You ever go to the Vedanta Center?
No, what is this?
So it's a church, and they bring all religions into it.
Yeah, that's wild.
So my dad used to take me when I was actually your age. I went there a couple times. It was really fucking cool, man.
I bet.
There was like this like Mother Teresa-like figure there. She was like this older lady. Super fucking chill. And just sat there like all welcoming, like very just like wind chimes going off in the background. Probably had this incense burning. It was like super fucking chill, man. And it was like everybody from all different ethnic backgrounds, religions, all came and just listened to this lady talk about life and fundamental principles. And it was really fucking cool, man, honestly. And I kind of want to go back there. I don't know. I don't even know if they still have it going on. I'm sure they do. I don't know if she's still around. But yeah, no, it's crazy, man. It's called the Vedanta Center.
I mean... when people talk about this whole one world religion, one world government shit, like I don't look at it as like a full like communist socialist regime, like a coup of like these world leaders. Like if they really do start pulling everything together, I'm not going to stop them.
Right.
But once it's together, I'll just take it over.
Of course. Like absolutely.
But I think getting everyone under one flag that says we are the planet Earth I think that would be great.
I do agree. I do agree. I think there's a middle ground to it, obviously. I think a middle ground to everything where it's like you don't want some corrupt power.
No, you don't.
That, you know, and with something like that, it could be an immense amount of power to the people that are creating the legislation of some sort. So, like, how do you create that legislation? Is it like a commune? Is it like some type of you know, gathering of, you know, like a, you know, some type of congress of the people? You know, how does that all work? Is it like 128 people representing every, you know, a United Nations of some sort of the world to create the laws that all negotiate, you know? And I feel like even with that, like, you're gonna have disagreements, and with immense power, that's where wars come from, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's difficult. I'm not saying the system's perfect. It's fucking far from perfect. And I don't believe this is the way either. But I just think no matter what, man, if you get to that point to make sure it's like muscled into place that things are going to remain a one world government, well, one world religion, it takes an immense amount of power to do that, to suppress anyone that wants to be a detractor from that.
Yeah.
And that's, it could be very corrupt based on that principle. I also believe, my opinion, I believe humans in intrinsically at the core often are very destructive. We're very destructive creatures, man. We take advantage overall as beings. A lot of us will take advantage of an opportunity. If like you have an immense amount of power, I've seen it even with artists, man. I've like, you know, well, dude, he's seen it, man. Being in my studio, like I've worked with artists and done songs on them, did 40, 50 million streams. And then all of a sudden it just turned into fucking the devil. They just turn into like a piece of shit, like someone I don't even want to fucking talk to. And
wild.
Oh, it happens all the fucking time, dude.
Once numbers and money get involved with anything,
I was gonna say, is it money or is it power?
Well, it's both, because like, you know, it comes kind of both kind of come with each other with an artist's career, especially. And I think money and power kind of like really shake hands often. I just noticed, like, you know, and what will happen is, like, you know, I'm not going to say names, but there was an artist recently that came back around. I haven't worked with him for a couple years now because he became a fucking prick and I didn't want to work with him anymore. And, you know, the numbers didn't make sense for like what I wanted out of the situation anymore. It became a leverage point of him being like, oh, well, I can get these many streams, so your number gets taken down now. It's like having a con. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't really make sense. And I hopped out, and then he came back around recently and apologized. But that's after his numbers have gone down. His powers came down now. So now he's like, all right. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to work with you again. And I put out a warning. I'm like, this is the last time I'm going to do it. I'm going to give you another chance here. Now that you know that, don't do that again. And you know, what's to say that maybe he'll get to that level again, and then maybe he'll understand that, but what if he gets higher? What if all of a sudden Sabrina Carpenter wants him on a song, or some crazy big artist? Is that a different level he doesn't know yet, that principle is going to be shaken up again? Because, again, it shifted a little bit out. He went from the top of that mountain to another mountain.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe we know that terrain, but this new terrain's a new terrain. And I just feel like, you know, come back all the way to the concept of power in general of a one-world religion, one-world government. It's like these people, that would be a newfound power at that point, because they have so much control that they would have to know what the destruction of humankind would be before they would maybe.
Most people not be couldn't so even aggressive. Conceptualize that, though. They're like, it's. The issue is people can't conceptualize what real power feels like. So when they get real power, they never thought about what they would do if they got real power. And now they are just taking advantage of it. But if you knew the whole time I was already that powerful and I was just in training for my part, for my role, like imagine you have the orchestra, or in your case, you're the producer or the master mixer. You got everything, all these different pieces laid out, whether it's vocals and beats or whatever. I don't know all of it. But you got to be that person who can put everything in its place, which that is real power, but you don't overextend your power saying, oh, yo, you're this not good, so let's, like, get out of here.
Right, exactly. It's interesting because, like, there's been times up until this point in your life that you've had a power, right? Like whether, even, excuse me, me myself, like I'll go into the Kava bar, or I'll go to some location where people know me, like a Webby show or something like that. Mm-hmm. I feel very powerful. Like, I walk in there, people kind of like, you know, besides security guys, they're fucking assholes.
Dude, was so funny.
Dude, oh my God, never been. That got me, like, as far as my pissed meter, that was like a newfound pissed
meter. Bro, I was like, no way they're doing this to you.
Yeah, it was insane, man. I felt like I was fucking. I was going to say something that I don't want to some joke. But anyways, I just felt unwelcome by them. But anyways, you know, I go into those places and like, I know, you know, Knox, not everyone's like Knox, Knox, you know, and it kind of creates a sense of power where it's like, you know, when you're not used to that power, and like, you know, you could think you're great, but then when you get a little bit more acclimated to like a new sense of it, and you're not acclimated yet, it could be fucking scary. It's like, you know, people coming up to you, shaking your hand, where you, I used to go to beat battles and I used to want to work with someone like Webby. Like my whole youth, man, I was like, I want to work with Webby. I want to work with Webby. Now I go and hang out with Webby and we're just shooting the shit at his fucking show. The levels change. And it's like, where is the peak? It's like, you know, until you get to a point like my friend Louis Bell, he's out in LA, works with Post Malone, stuff like that. I mean, that's to me the peak. Like, you've been at the peak. You've had number one hits 10 times, and you know, how many more fucking, how much higher can it go? At that point, you're just comparing apples to oranges with Michael Jackson and stuff. And then you could still look at that like, okay, I'm not Quincy Jones or I'm not this person, you know? It just like, it really is interesting because like, I feel like no matter what, you get power, like you have power in certain situations that you know what it's like to be the most powerful, mm-hmm. you know, in that room, like in a Webby concert, like I am one of the most powerful people there. I'm the guy besides him, I'm part of his inner team of the audio being made and the songs being created. You know, when you're hanging out with Breno and I or whoever, you have more power because now you're affiliating with people that are kind of running shit out here. You know, you have like a media thing going. He has a clothing brand that, like, you know, I'm not gonna say I connected everything because I haven't, but I have connected a lot of people his way, and rightfully so, because I think Breno's amazingly talented individual, and I want to connect people that are amazingly talented together. I think it only creates great things, and it also shows, and that demonstrates people when they have corrupt power in their mind and they want to use that in a negative way, they'll just take advantage of me connecting one dot to them and he'll just walk away. And I'm like, all right, that person isn't really for the big picture of us. They're for themselves. So yeah. I think there's those two differentiating factors of humans, where it's like some people just in it for themselves and some people are in it as a collective. And that's way rarer than the latter.
You really you think it's rare to find people who are in it for the collective?
Yes.
Wow.
The thing is, like, a lot of people don't want to acknowledge their upbringing. So, like, for example, an artist can start off with 10 listens, 10 streams, and get to the point where they're getting 100 million streams. And if they're not sitting there remembering who was there with them when they had nothing, when they are at the top, they're going to be a fucking asshole. It's one of those things where it's, like, just appreciating those people and cherishing those things and... You know what I mean? If someone's helping you build something, you don't fucking push them to the curb. You, if anything, you build something bigger with them because they're the ones who helped you from the jump.
Now, to counter the point, though, and the reason why I do agree why you also outgrow people as well, for sure, that does happen. I think there's a lot of philosophies online nowadays of like, cut everyone out, cut your whole circle out and create a new circle with winners. And I think that's toxic as fucking shit. I don't.
We talked about either. This one day.
Yeah, I think that's really toxic. There's definitely a middle to all of it, right? So like, if you have some friend that like thought of an idea with you, right? Or like really believed in you when you were coming up or whatever. And they just say they sat in this basement, the same basement. You could have sat in this basement and just... chill playing fucking video games all day.
Yeah. There's
plenty of kids that do that, or even 22-year-olds. But you didn't. You created something you want to build something out of, you know?
Yeah.
It's the people that are there for you at that point in time. Yeah, they're supportive. But what if they just want to stay in this basement? It's like, you ever see the movie The Founder?
Mm-mm.
Wow.
I don't watch a lot of movies.
Down. Me neither. That's a great movie, though.
All right.
Michael Keaton killed it. So it's about Ray Kroc, founding McDonald's and stuff, where he really didn't found McDonald's. It was two brothers, and he kind of took it from them.
Yep. I watched a documentary on that, actually.
Yeah, so this is the movie on it. And
Awesome. I can't wait to see that.
I mean, Ray Kroc was a piece of shit. And I think with business, a lot of people kind of, you got to do piece of shit things sometimes. I think there's also a line there. There's all morally subjective at points, right? So there's no like law of like, you got to be this way morally. It really depends on how you're raised. But I believe that if like, you know, you said, okay, I'm just going to listen to brothers and just keep this one location at McDonald's and just till my dying day, McDonald's wouldn't be what it is today. This no. empire. And some people look, if you look at the general, I mean, besides it being shit fucking fast food and it's really not good for you, I mean, overall, what's the net positive besides it being like some local spot versus this empire that is like taking over the world? As much as I don't like McDonald's, there was a net positive for sure. You know what I mean? As far as this growth of this immense brand.
Yeah, it brought people together. I think everything always comes back to community and unity. And that's where Breno's brand, Unitary, Uni, is it was supposed to really be about like bringing people together. And there's other aspects to it as well. He's explained it to me. Well, anything that brings people together, I think, will have a net positive. And that's why even religion and something, I don't really believe in religion. I believe in, like, ideas and stuff. Right. Religion, you build these lines and then you block other things off. And once you start blocking other things off, the unity now becomes separation. And when you... It's okay to have individualism within the big oneness of everything and everyone.
Right.
However, you need ways to bring these individuals back to the one where you have companies like McDonald's or Breno's Unitary Mind Savior Services. And then you making music and making beats and bringing artists and other producers together.
Absolutely.
It all revolves around oneness.
Absolutely. And yeah, it depends on, like I said, the moral high ground of whatever individual is conducting that form of power. Is it all really? And I think the more money involved, the more you just see who the fuck they are, man. It's just, that's all it is. It just clears it up, because when someone's in the struggle boat and they just want to like get any leg up they can, they're going to come off like they're going to do all that shit. But as soon as they have like, so I always judge people when they're in the sense of power. When in a sense of like something that maybe that one moment they have a leg up, and how do they treat you, right? Like, how do they treat you when they're on the stage and they're making that announcement and when they're talking about their accolades? Did they mention you? Did they talk about that? And I think, like, you know, judge it there, right? Because like the further it goes and the more along the road, that separation is going to keep fucking winding down. And then next thing you know, you're in a fucking cave somewhere and this motherfucker is in a posh mansion. And you're like, damn, dude, I thought I was in it with you the whole time. It's like, and then they'll have all the reasons like, well, I had to get a new management team and all these things that they never talk to you about. And it gets to that point. I've seen that happen as well. And sometimes it happens for good reason, right? Like even for instance, like, I'm not going to mention artists I work with that had this relationship, but like with Jelly Roll, like they talked to Jelly Roll all the time when he was on the come up, and you know, he just doesn't have time anymore, man. It's like, and Jelly's a great guy. Like Jelly, like I've seen a lot of people in Jelly's position become fucking assholes. He's not an asshole. He's actually a really fucking solid dude. As much as like he puts that whole, like, some people think he's, like, put on an act being so nice. He's not. He's genuinely that fucking nice. It's just a matter of, like, dog, like, you can only dedicate so much fucking time, man. I have people hit me up sometimes, even my position, and they'll want me to listen to beats and go through the loop packs. Just got a guy that sent me a loop pack while I'm on this podcast. Like, bro, I don't have fucking time for that shit, bro. I don't have time for it. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
You gotta ignore those people. You gotta move on sometimes. It doesn't mean I don't fuck with them. If they send me a loop pack and say, listen, man, I just did some shit for Eminem or whatever, of course I'm gonna pay attention. Of course, I'm gonna pay attention because there's an opportunity there, and it's like, all right, now there's an opportunity, but there's a moral high ground there where it's like I still pay attention to them. It's not like I ignore everything. I'll still welcome some of the chaos in there because I do believe there's something magical about going up to like a homeless guy that's playing the drums on the corner and being like, this guy's fucking ripping it up, he's killing it, he's hitting the fucking drums like fucking, I'll throw him on a track. Yeah, I think there's a magic to it. So I think it's an essence of like doing that. You reach down a little bit, help out, and be community with people like that. But also, if there is an opportunity that comes up, you got to be an opportunist. It's a mixture of both. You got to mix both. But a lot of people, the way it goes, you're going to see this when you go to LA. A lot of people are just opportunists, bro. They just want to cling on to the thing that's the bigger thing, the bigger thing, the bigger thing. And a lot of time when you do that, it's like they'll reach up and they'll try to use that thing as like a scaffold. Like they'll like climb onto and they'll be on it. They're like, no, 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 no. Get the fuck off. You know, like that's usually the way it works because the thing is, you're not acclimated to those heights yet. You know what I'm saying? So it's like you're trying to, right? So if you went from, talking about mountain again, like you go from right here, you're in a basement to the top of fucking Mount Washington, it's going to be hard to breathe. It's going to be all of a sudden, it's like, it's like, cause it's fucking high up, man.
Yeah.
But if you acclimate and you actually, it's like acclimate, you go up the mountain and you walk up that motherfucker.
Yep.
You get used to the air thinning out. You get used to those things. The practice makes perfect at the top of Everest. How much training do you have to do to actually go to the top of Everest? It takes a lot.
Yeah, bro.
So that's the thing. A lot of people will try to reach to the top of the mountain. But even if you got to the top of the mountain, you're going to be there for one quick second, and then you're either going to fucking die on that mountain, and you're not going to live up there, or you're going to have to get the fuck down. And that's the thing. You got to acclimate. So it's a mixture of both, man. And I think it's a mixture of, like, reaching down, being communal, understanding you have more power there. You build up that power, that threshold, it builds up your, you know, you can deliver more. And then that crowd behind you, that legion behind you, as you, those people that reach down, like, oh, I have an opportunity. It's like, yo, I got a whole fucking army behind me. And then that's when you can level up and get to that next level. That's what I think people confuse. And it's a very hard thing. They don't teach you these things in school, man.
No, bro. You know? Dude, that was so deep, but also so well said.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Dude, that was spectacular. Because it had, like, the whole time you were saying that, I'm thinking to myself, like, you're right. You are 100% right. And you always, I like to break life into, you have givers and you have takers. Yep. And then givers receive, takers take. Mm-hmm. So you receive gratefully and you give graciously.
Right.
And some people just can't comprehend that you get one hand up and then you like, oh, let me just keep pulling this rope.
Right.
And just keep pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling. And then all of a sudden they're like, well, I have nothing to give you anymore. Like,
of course. Absolutely.
What are you going to, like, I don't ever think what someone can do for me more as how can I actually help them? Like, what can I do for you? And it all just comes down to skill. And that's where my attention to detail and the diligence come in. Like how I see the world, how I see the mind, all this stuff. You really, everyone's got to focus more on the idea that when you're helping other people, you're also helping yourself.
Yes.
Because your greatest opportunities won't come from you trying to help yourself. It will be from you trying to help someone else. And then all of a sudden, there'll just be that golden egg sitting there. And you'll just be like, "What? How did this get here?" But meanwhile, I'm a big believer in God. God is just setting that up for you as a reward for you being selfless.
100%. 100%.
It's the what you put out is what you get back.
Yep. Yeah, I think, well, I mean, not equally. I mean, like, I do think you get things back. I think a lot of time things can really, you know, like you said, you can give too much. Like, I knew a chick that I grew up with that gave way too fucking much, man. I mean, every time I talked to her, she always wanted to help me and how was I doing? How was my life? And then I'd ask her about her life. She's like, yeah, I'm not really, you know, things aren't going well, but she would like kind of brush it off. And she was a fucking whore, man. I mean, she fucked every guy in my goddamn high school. I mean, I clapped it a couple times. I mean, it is what it is. But like, you know, besides all that, like she had a fucked up life, man. Her parents just didn't believe in her. I think she got raped when she was a kid and shit like that. And then, you know, real painful to see. And, man, she just went, she gave too much, man. Kept giving and giving and giving. She had nothing, man. She's broke. Just sent this fucking Section 8, man. She ended up getting fucking the HIV down the line. She became a meth addict. She's just fucked up, man. Cancer, whole nine. Just like one of those, like, just every time you talk to her, it's like, this is what's going on in my life. And everything's a fucking depression bubble. But it's like, how are you doing, though? It's like, how are you doing? Like, fix yourself, bro. Like, I don't know what, you know what I'm saying? It's like, well,
these are those people that, like, instead of focusing on their own life, they're more invested into other people's life. Yeah. I just posted a short on this, and I just love this topic because It's when you're trying to live someone else's life at that point. Like, right. You're like, oh, but how's your life going? So I can just get out of my body and just go into yours and pretend yeah. I don't even exist anymore. Like, fuck, like, this Section 8 not even a thing.
Yep.
Like, let me just, like, move my mind into something else.
Right.
Yeah, it's like a form of escapism in a sense.
Real, yeah. Well, that's you can spend your whole life in jail, and mentally speaking, you can just imagine you're off on an island in the Caribbean.
Absolutely.
Dude, it's the power of the mind is very powerful, and if you use it the right way, you can get your way out of New Hampshire to LA and then find yourself on stages public speaking. And that was my whole plan for going there. Network, build relationships, and just have a good time and experience life. I haven't been I feel like I've been preparing this summer for this in my level of experience, but I feel like I could do more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, it's funny because when I was your age, I had a thing on my computer. My desktop background was LAX Airport. And I was like, I'm going to go to LA this year. And I just never did it. You know what I mean? And I just was like, you know, I think my purpose said I can do something out here. And I did. I did do something out here. So I have no regrets of me staying out here at all. Actually, I'm happier I stayed out here. I ended up going to L.A. with good company. Went out there with Atlantic Records a couple times. I was in a room with Boy Wonder. First time I went to L.A., I was literally working with Drake's producer. So it's like it worked out. I didn't have to work my way up in L.A. It's like so I can come out there with a level up. I wouldn't have got that if I went out there right off the bat. Now I might have hit it off. I know a lot of people that go to L.A. and don't do shit. A lot of people that have all the drive in the fucking world, they go to L.A., nothing really happens. It takes a certain amount of, like, you know, really the right time, right place kind of mindset. And also just having the mindset, right? Because, like, it might not be the right time, right place in that specific place that you think it's going to be in. But it could be you going down the street to some bar, some piano bar, and seeing some fucking random, like, person playing the piano. And you have a superstar there or, like, their management. And then you're, like, connected with them. Like, oh, what do you do? You have the accolades. Be like, yeah, I'm Knox. You know, I've done, you know, a couple platinum records, shit like that. And it's like, boom, then it connects. You just never know how the fuck it's going to happen. And you know what's interesting is that it always happens in a way you never expect. Like, I don't give a fuck, dude. Anytime I ever thought it was going to happen the exact way I thought it was going to happen, it never does. Ever. It always happens in the weirdest, most passive, strange, like fucking 1 a.m. random message in the DM shit. Like, random ass shit. It's never like, you know, 1 p.m. on the dot, middle of the day, my business email. You know, it's never that way, bro. And anytime it ever was that way, it never lasted.
Yeah, you know? I feel that.
At least for me, at least. It might be different for others.
I'm a big believer in the law of attraction where, like, you speak things into existence, but you don't try to make it happen your way. You just say, this is going to happen, and then you give up control. You say, this is going to happen, and then you keep pushing everything towards this, but you just don't try to, like, force anything. Like, you just let it be. Where I've been trying to get a TEDx talk for the last 2 years, and every time I've, like, talked to this company about it, something's come up financially that I no longer could invest the money that I wanted to put into that, into it. And it's just been so one struggle after another. And I feel like now I have more points to talk about overall, but you realize good things really do take time. You can't rush anything in life. Like, you're already in heaven, so what's the rush?
Right. Well, those times of failure just trains you. Like I said, going back to the gym theory, it's like it just trains you. When the day comes, you need to use those muscles. You have them. It's like, for instance, like, you know, I'm going to the gym all the time. I know you're very physically fit, but I'm just starting my fitness journey at the age of 36, and I've lost 40 pounds so far, and I put on some muscle, and
it's fucking sick.
Yeah, no, it's fire as fuck. It feels great too, man. You get all the compliments and shit, but I'm not even close to where I am. I mean, I want to be at least 80 pounds down from this. But anyways, that's enough of that. I'm training every day, right? And I'm lifting weights. It's like, for what? I'm just sitting at a fucking computer all day. Besides looking good and feeling good, it's like, what else? Is there a reason? Like, but then if I ever have to move or, like, help someone move or some shit, I'm ready. You know what I'm saying? It's like, so, like,
yeah,
it's those times that, like, that come along. It's like you get the unexpected call, like, I need some help or I need this, da-da-da. Usually comes in the form of help. Someone hits you for help. don't turn it down. Because there's a reason why they need some help. There's a reason most of the time. And if it's in your line of work and you're in your field, just do it. Help them. That's usually the times where they're the most vulnerable state. And when they're in that vulnerable state, energy takes to that. And that's the time that the energy will come over to you. Because I've noticed anytime I've ever got an opportunity, I jumped in. I helped out with a mix. I helped out with something. I took a reduction in budget. Like even me working with Joyner, I took a reduction in pay to make his first mixtape because I believed in him. It was help. It wasn't in the form of hiring. It was help. So always help someone. That will get you more money in the long run. But don't help someone that keeps needing help. It's about like help and then lift you up. Help. It's like imagine lifting someone up onto that scaffold you're on and then they just jump off.
Yeah.
Like, help me again. No, bro. Like no. Fuck, you walk up the stairs now, motherfucker. Do what I did.
Literally.
That's yeah.
Well, it's when Brenno was had a he was you know what Brenno has been through lately. There was people there, but I was like one of the first people who like knew exactly what was going on and how it was going on, and I was spending a lot of time at his house, practically speaking, living with him.
Right.
And when things got bad for him, I was able to fill a position of someone like Brenno's always been someone I looked up to, and more than just his styling and whatnot, but his ability to this generate conversation that is positive and spreads a good message. And when I felt like it was my turn to repay all the favors for the times that I wasn't doing well and he was there for me, I was able to do that. And it was incredible watching this. All you have to do is be yourself, and the people who are meant to be around you will take to that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you're vulnerable in the way that you just tell them whatever you feel. Like, this is how I feel. And if they're actually a real homie or they actually care about you, they will care. Like, they'll say, like, oh, like, how are you doing? Like, what's going on?
The camera kicked out.
Yo, for real?
Yeah, kicked out. I heard it.
Yeah, I bet it overheated.
Fucking overheated. Oh, damn, it's pretty cold down here, though.
Yeah, but wait, normally I get like a good hour, and we're an hour in right now. Let me see what's up with it.
Yeah, we can wrap up soon too. That was pretty good to talk to. Me pusana wait. Me pusana wait. Webby coated.
I know. I think he actually does have that one.
Sure he does.
There's like a whole collection of the mini ones.
Alright. I started it back up. I think we have a few more minutes. We'll finish it up and I'll just edit mesh that in.
Hold on but one second.
No worries. Do your thing. Oh, yo. How's it going, Kyle?
It's going good, man.
Dude. We're gonna get a podcast going. It won't be this one, but me and you will talk about some psychedelics one day.
Oh, hell yeah, I got you, bro.
Dude, it's so fun. I literally have such a deep passion for psychs and this that whole, not even just psychedelics, but consciousness as a whole. I was thinking about this in my shower. Why do people do the things they do? This is the question that I am obsessed with. What makes people tick? Like, what? Why do we do this? And I think that would be such a great conversation to start that psychedelic podcast.
Yeah, no, that's a really good topic. There's so many ways you can look at it, too. So it's like, yeah. Just
dude, it will be good.
Going through all of it. Have you heard of Alexander Shulgin?
No.
So Alexander Shulgin's pretty much the guy who created MDMA. He did research and he found this chemistry book that had the whole structure of how to make it and everything.
Really?
He essentially recreated it, but the original chemist didn't even know that it was a psychoactive compound, and he found out obviously. And then from there, he's made over 100 different psychedelic compounds. He's written books about it. And
that's wild. I didn't know you could make different ones. I don't know how many there actually are. I just focus on the classics, so like LSD, psilocybin, a little bit of ecstasy. I know of like dimethyltryptamine and stuff like
DMT's
that.
Yeah, DMT is something else. To me, it's special because, like, we all dream. We've all had that experience without even realizing it. So it's just, and even being conscious to me is essentially like hallucinating.
Well, yeah, from the perspective of neuroscience, is reality is a controlled hallucination. You have your five major senses, and then whatever extra sensory like perceptions you can grasp. It's different for everyone at that point, but you are a brain with consciousness that lies in, I believe, in the pineal gland. And I think that's what houses the soul, where it goes from the pineal gland and down through the chakra system. And it's, everything's connected. And this is like the energy highway of the body, like going back through the spine and everything. And everything just comes down to energy and the consciousness and how to elevate your consciousness by adding energy to it. But you need the energy to be ordered, because if it's disordered, it basically just becomes random chaos. And there needs to be the balance between chaos and order, as like we've had, talked about. Yo, dude, we could just push this conversation out for another hour. But, we'll call it here. Yo, everyone, the camera died about 5 minutes ago. It is what it is. We only lost like a minute or 30 seconds of the footage. But
dude, we all got naked. And we fucking, it got crazy in here, bro. We had like three Korean hookers coming here, dude. We had more baby oil than Diddy's fucking house. Oh, dude, this table was not here. So we had to recreate all of it. We're back.
Yeah, this took a hot second, though.
Hell yeah, that was a real hot second.
Yeah, I bet. Dude, I can't do it. I can't. No.
Dude, so sick. Oh, shit. I'm pissing off your dog.
Yo, that dog gets pissed off every time I walk around. All right, yo, I love you all too. Peace. Thank you for watching. Bye, bye, guys.